now broadcasting the Webcomic Beacon.
Hello and welcome to episode 141 of the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com. I'm Fess of Fessworks.com, and let's see here. We are hosted on the Rampage Network, a webcomics hosting and community site at rampagenetwork.com. I'm here with Tanya Higgins of daisiesandshit.com. Welcome to the show.
Hello, hello.
Forever, never can ever go a lower rating than we currently are. Just because of your website.
Mine?
And we have Mark Savory of autumnlake.com. Welcome.
Well, hello there.
And I might sound a little quiet this today because I have somebody else in the studio. We have Melissa Kircher of Tin Lizard Productions, a.k.a. Chibutikin, with me in the studio using the better mic.
Hi.
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 How are you guys?
You're so awesome.
Twitter faded.
Yay. You guys are awesome, too.
We're not worthy. We're not worthy.
Thank you for having me on yet again. Also, even though I don't have a webcomic.
You don't have a webcomic, but you have a geek podcast that you're on at thegeeklife.tv, which you should check that out because, you know, Melissa's on it.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's really all it takes. We're all Melissa fights. We just...
Do you ever know that you're my hero? You're everything I would like to be.
Oh my, I need more alcohol for this.
There you go.
All right, I got a bottle of Aftershock.
Oh,
holy cow. Is that like an energy drink?
Kind of.
No.
No.
It's like a cinnamon cordial or...
That stuff. There's cinnamon schnapps.
Yeah, it's a... it has crystallite...
It has rock candy at the bottom of it, and so the whole thing is like syrup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's basically pre-vomit. That's what you're looking at right there.
Well, actually, if you mix Aftershock and... Oh, what's the other one?
The Goldschlager? Goldschlager?
No. The same company does like a wintergreen flavor.
Oh.
Or at least it used to.
But it's still Aftershock really and... syrupy. Like, they're too sweet.
Oh, they're way too sweet.
That's why you add them to drinks rather than having a shot of them, I would think.
Yeah, it's pretty good if you add it to, like, something else that you want to have a little bit of cinnamon to it. Otherwise, if you're going to, this is going to be the working space.
Dave is distracted.
This is the bartender segment. You know, I haven't drank for 2 years. 2 years! My doctor tells me I can't drink, like, last week, and now I'm sad.
Okay.
Didn't bug me for 2 years, but now all I want.
All right, so it looks like we're going to start. We're going to see if this works. Basically, I'm going to attempt to start recording this show so people can see it later as Melissa's going to be. And it's hanging, so. Oh, wait. Recording has started. All right. Awesome.
That's what she said.
All right.
Probably.
It's hanging.
See?
Okay.
I'm thinking about just starting a fan club for you.
So we...
For Fess?
No.
No, Fess doesn't have any fans.
For you, Melissa. We'll all go to the places that you've been to on Foursquare and set up little altars. We'll do geocache altars at all the places you've been on Foursquare.
That would be so cool.
Like we'll find like a park bench that you sat on and then encase it in Lucite or something and say, "Dear leader once sat there."
And then we can all, you know, we sign, people just go by and sign in the Lucite. That'd be beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm on it.
That's getting kind of creepy. But I approve.
All right. We got to get to the subject of the show. Melissa's here to show us a thing or two about coloring, particularly. Melissa, tell us a little bit about your resume here.
Well, about 5 years ago, I started coloring and lettering comics, as in regular print comics.
And paid.
Yeah, I got money for this. Not a whole lot, because nobody makes money in comics, but unless you're Todd McFarlane, and, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I actually did a lot of work for Capstone Publishing, which does historical comics for school kids, among other things. So I was doing comics about, like, Francis Scott Key and Mother Jones, which was actually really cool.
Classics Illustrated.
Yeah, I also did a lot of work with John Kovalik and Christopher Jones, particularly for Dr. Blink's Superhero Shrink, which is the three of us on a team, and it's a property that the three of us own. And it's essentially the Bob Newhart show for superheroes. So I was doing that. This, that, and the other thing. I did a lot of work for Green Ronin for their Mutants and Masterminds property. So doing spot artwork for them, and this, that, and the other thing. Femme Noir with Joe Staten and Christopher Mills.
And our experiences with Melissa tell us that as we go through the program, she will remember things that she's done that are equally as awesome and is just forgotten about, because
I am the world of tangents. Yes.
No.
What?
I would have to contend you on that.
What?
Have you ever heard me talk in the podcast?
Yes.
I am the master of tangents.
Well, just raw tangents, but I actually have content after them.
Oh. Well, that's not what you said. I'm claiming tangents. I'm just claiming tangents.
All I was saying was, it'll tickle her memory as we go along. There's more stuff.
There will be stuff. Yes.
Yeah. So we're going to see how this works. We're going to attempt to record this so that it can be seen later. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But we're going to try to, if people are in the live chat room, it should work as she goes through some of her items in Photoshop.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll try to keep track of the time so that I don't run over and we keep going while I'm not recording, because that's bad. So anyway.
All right.
So Melissa, you have the floor.
Oh my.
Or the desktop.
Okay, is the desktop live now?
Yeah, it should be.
Okay, cool.
Couldn't you let her sit in a chair?
I'm sitting in a chair.
Yeah, I'm sitting in this little fold-up behind her.
That's creepy as hell right there. It sounds like one of those deer stands. He's in a little fold-up.
Well, I checked the room for guns. Don't worry, it's okay.
Good girl.
All right, so first of all... It's hard to... I can't see the chat room, so I can't exactly ask it, see if people can see this stuff. I'm going to drag some of the tool windows over into what should be the frame of the video here, and then you can kind of see what I'm doing.
Do you want me to then resize the window and bring the chat room up?
Actually, if somebody could just watch the chat room and see if there's questions, that'd be good.
Oops, sorry.
Hey!
I can shrink maximize the window a bit.
Wait, what?
Okay. Oh, he's a glory looking fella.
This is interesting. Tools. Okay, apparently the Tree Lobster says we have tools, so apparently it's working.
Okay.
By the way, Tree Lobster's totally saved my podcast this week, so
I saw that.
Thank you,
Steve.
Is this
a tarot card?
This is a piece of art for the Green Ronin Mutants and Masterminds book.
Ah, okay.
So the line art is by Adam DeCraker, and actually Adam DeCraker is one of my favorite artists that I've worked with. What was interesting about this particular project was that I was receiving artwork from three different artists, and I was doing all the finishing work. So I was getting, let me turn off some layers, basically that. And I was getting artwork from three very different artists, and I thought it was a very interesting illustration of some collaborations work and some don't. And De Kraker, I only got four pieces of art from De Kraker, but these were by far my favorite ones. I'm kind of a minimalist at heart, so these really kind of played to my sensibilities. So anyway, what I first got was just the line art, and what I do, one of the main concerns when you're doing print as opposed to doing artwork that's going to be just shown on a computer, you have to be mindful of the four-color printing process. And essentially, what you have to keep in mind is that the four colors, cyan, magenta, yellow, and black, CMYK, can move slightly independently of each other. Because you can have plate shift in the printing process. And so you kind of have to be mindful of, first of all, how much ink you're using in each of the colors and how you're laying them against each other. So I'm just going to go into my process, and I'll kind of explain along the way how I do this and why, hopefully. So I get the ink file, and usually when something comes in on from an artist that's just line art, it just comes as a bitmap or something. But when you change it to a Photoshop file, a lot of times if you look at CMYK sliders, oh, I should also say, do everything in CMYK.
Thank you.
When you convert from RGB to CMYK for printing, your colors turn out very, very muddy, because usually the transfer involves putting a little bit of black into the dark colors.
Yeah.
Now, and black just makes the ink muddy. So if you want the maximum amount of color control when you're moving to print, do it in CMYK, because then you can really watch where this black slider is.
I also got to jump in here and say the first and foremost step in any of this, aside from using CMYK, is to scan in high res.
Oh, yes, that's very important. Right now, the printing industry likes things at least at 450 dots per square inch. 600 is about standard.
Really?
But oh. You want to go at, yeah, at least 300. Otherwise, you're just not going to be happy with the results. So 600.
If you're
gonna
do 3, do 6.
Yes, do 6. When in doubt, do 600 DPI.
And get more RAM for your computer if you can.
Yeah, because especially if you're doing coloring for print, you're gonna wind up with a lot of layers in the Photoshop files, and they pick up, they eat memory like you wouldn't believe. So anyway, when I usually get the files, this one's already cleaned up. So as you can see, I'm taking the sampler and I'm sampling the lines, and it's just pure 100% black ink. Usually when you do that with a file that's come in, usually it's some mixture like this. Can everybody see the tool?
You're going to have to also audioly describe it for the podcast.
Oh, okay.
Basically,
go for it.
Melissa has a black and white file opened up, and it's of a skinless woman.
A zombie.
She's illustrating she's demonstrating what happens when you take in a black and white file that should be black and white, but when you have it in Photoshop, and especially convert it to CMYK through, particularly in Photoshop, through, I think it's through image mode, that you get the CMYK sliders end up throwing a mess of CM and Y into just what should be just black.
Yeah. Right. So what you want to do is clean it up so it's just the black ink. And you also want to make sure your line art is really nice and clean. So what I do is, if I really zoom in, you can see this is all anti-aliased. It's the line art is either on or off. It's either black or it's not black.
Right.
Mm. So let's see how you have your...
To drag, it's that forward button I just remembered.
I actually want to zoom out again.
Okay, control minus. I guess just minus. Okay. Hmm. I learned something today.
Hold on. Hey, look at that. That worked. So anyway, what I do is, first of all, a lot of times the art hasn't been cleaned up, so it's anti-aliased. So I first take... I'm used to working on a Mac. Some of the stuff is moving around on me.
This is also Photoshop 7.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, where is everything?
Wow, maniacal laughter. Okay. I think you should have looked for more than guns. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, okay. I think you're right.
There are knives around. Oh, there's one.
Oh, look, there's one.
He's a Muppet.
Great.
Fesh is a Muppet.
We all know she could kick his ass. Okay, keep going. All
right. So anyway, there's a way to do thresholds in here somewhere that I'm not finding.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have 7 either, so
oh, it's adjustments. Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
It but it's not turned on.
Normally, I go to basically...
Oh, wait. I know. Hey, look at that. Oh, no.
Go to mode.
Mode.
If you go to mode, then grayscale it, then bitmap it, you get all the way back to thresholds.
Yeah, that's another way to do it. But usually if you go into adjustments, there's also a...
Is it image adjustments or enhancements?
Yeah, it's usually under adjustments, and it says threshold. And that will convert it into a nice anti-alias line where it just is nice and clean.
Now, see, I've been drawing directly from the tablet.
Mm-hmm.
And the pen I use, it has some gray at the edges to make it... a smooth line.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
That is aliasing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that gives me some problems. Because when I go to fill it in with black, there's these little outlines of white in there.
Right.
Quite annoying. I found a way to get rid of the worst of them, but that's... Yeah.
What you can do when you're drawing, you can, rather than using the brush tool, you can use the pencil tool.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Either that, or actually do your line work in vector.
Yeah, that's nice too.
Yeah, I don't think Photoshop 7 has any vectoring.
Well, it has some.
It's also if you're bucket filling areas, and if your bucket fill has anti-aliasing, you want it basically. You have there's like a box that says like pixel like buffer or something like that. Put that to zero and uncheck anti-aliasing. Then it will only just go right up to where the lines are.
Hey, did you just say the word bucket fill on a professional coloring podcast? I'm just curious.
That's what I do.
He did. I will explain.
Because Mark was bucket filling, so I'm just explaining.
I'm bucket filling. It sounds dirty when you say it, Fesh.
Bucket filling. What?
Bucket. He said
bucket filler. Bucket filler.
Bucket.
You dirty bucket filler. I'm sorry, Mom. Yeah. Go ahead. I'm learning here. I'm excited.
Anyway, I found the adjustments menu. I had to unlock the layer. Shocking. So yeah, threshold. You can adjust the threshold level here, and then that will, you know, anti-alias all of your lines. So there you go.
What would you set for the threshold level, though?
You can play with it, because if it's if you're turning aliased art into, or sorry,
if turning fuzzy art into nice smooth line art.
If you're turning into plain black and white versus having all the gray along the edges, you can actually move that slider. Let me go back into it. You can move the threshold slider side to side and figure out how much you want those little gray areas to fill in. And you're not going to see it on this piece since it's already cleaned up.
And especially if we're working with somebody else's line work, depending on what they've done that line work in, whether they've done it digitally or whether they've done it with ink, it's really going to depend from artist to artist. So you can't just count on one setting and go with that.
Right. Also, thresholding is a really good way to get those pesky little ghosts of pencil art from underneath the
That's
ink
mostly
areas.
What I use it for.
Yeah.
Well, I use little pencils.
Heavy
so
with the pencil.
So, anyway, there we have our line work cleaned up, at least at the edges, and then to... now, let me unlock the layer again. And then what I usually do is I will select the line art itself you know, make non-contiguous, turn off use all layers, and I'll just select the black area here, and there's all of the black line art. Do a fill with 100% K, it wipes out all the other colors.
Yeah.
And you're good for that layer.
Pretty.
Deselect. So there you go. So that is the start of the ink layer, and as for the layer itself, I set it to multiply, and I will explain as I go why I did that. So rather than normal, set it to multiply. Because what essentially we're going to do is set it up so the color areas actually run underneath the black ink. So you what you are preventing is a haloing effect in the printing process if the plates shift. So if you look at really old comic books and you see one of the pages that has been printed where like the blue plate is shifted, you see a rim on the blue line art and it kind of creeps over the line art on the other side of the page or something like that. In order to prevent haloing when you're printing these days, it's a good idea to make the colors bleed underneath the line art a little bit.
Yes.
Though it's probably not as exaggeratedly bad these days as far as
right.
in most cases, but you know, you'll get still crisper results nonetheless.
Right.
Yes.
Now, and isn't that known as flatting?
Camera.
Isn't that what flatting is?
That is what flatting is. Or at least in part. So in the
golly, I hope so. That's what I've been calling it.
Okay. So the next step. The next thing I do is I do a copy of this layer, and I create a layer that I call undercolor. And what this is what I take the inks. Let's select all of our inks, you know, just the line art. And I do a select. Man, you've got it.
It's modify.
It's modify. There it is.
Because you're already selected.
Contract. Modify, contract. Contract selection by 2 pixels. And it basically shrinks all the little selection line in from the edges of your inks by 2 pixels. And then you go into this new layer and you paste it in. Or not paste it in, but you fill it with not just black ink, but I will select it here and show you. It is 60% cyan, 40% magenta, 40% yellow, and 100% black. And what this does is in these large areas of just plain black, it ensures a very nice, rich, dark black ink. If you print just straight black ink onto a page, it often looks just kind of pale. And then if any of the color inks creep underneath it, you can see it gets darker because it's mixing the inks together. What this does is, you know, adding all 4 of the inks together, you're getting that nice, rich, solid black. And by pulling it in from the edges of your actual line art, you're preventing that undercolor from shifting out of the zone of the black. So if your blue plate shifts, you don't get this halo of blue where there shouldn't be.
And if it's shifting more than those 2 pixels, find a new printer.
Yes.
Clever. Devilishly clever.
And I've been motioned away from step away from the Photoshop.
Yeah. We're going to have to take a quick break right now. So you basically got a basic gist of what to do for prepping the line work. And if any of this is confusing, I'm pretty sure we'll get a write-up and put it somewhere on the site later. After this, otherwise hopefully the video will be able to show everything, but we're going to take a quick break right now, and when we come back
more.
We'll be right back.
I feel like we need hold music.
I'm not supposed to be holding that long. I'm going to close that. People can get a behind-the-scenes look of how I deal with recording the show, I guess, this time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Still say you should get Audacity.
I'd have to learn it. And I don't have time to learn a whole new
system. It's not that different. It's not that much to learn.
Okay, then Mark, why switch?
Because it has support, or I don't know. I mean, it's yours
support.
Is like outdated, isn't it? Isn't that what you said?
What do you mean it has support?
Outdated and clunky and
no, Goldwave is awesome. I just don't have the latest version. I have to pay for. I haven't paid for it yet.
Fess is cheap.
Well, you know, Goldwave has been around for like 15 years online, so it's a tried and true, and it has like a lot of options on it, and I've been using it for years. I just haven't really explored it as much, but you know, I'm saving just little areas. You know, that's why I save 30 minutes at a time, so that I don't completely lose whole pieces if it comes down to it, and also to save up on RAM. But anyway, here's Melissa.
Mark, I blame you for getting him ranting.
Rant! Rant! Rant!
Yeah, he's ranting. I could actually take the microphone away from him.
Ooh. That's right. You're in his physical space.
Hey, look, knives.
It's off.
And again, I have complete confidence that she could take you. She probably has the experience to back that shit up.
Actually, she could
punch you so hard your beard would fly off, man.
She's in a roll chair with armrests sitting up to a corner desk. She can't get out that easily.
I'm also mean.
She's got some Matrix shit in her. I bet you anything.
I saw where you keep your password file.
Yeah. Oh.
See?
It's all.
No, I gotta change it. All right, coloring.
Coloring. Hi.
We have a winner.
We have a winner. All right, so we have a layer called inks and we have a layer called undercolor. And let me deselect this. So the way I have these two layers set up are to refresh, the inks are set at multiply. And then the undercolor, I just set at normal. And so it's laying on top of the inks layer. And I lock them down because I've had situations where I'm coloring at 3:30 in the morning and I'm trying to color in the wrong layer and it goes badly. So we have our line art. Yay! And next, what I usually go in and do is I lay in... Oh, this one's set up a little strange, but I lay in the flat colors. So the way I just lay in the flats is I'll go to a given area and contiguous, use all layers, you know, go to my color layer. And I'll select inside there. And before I do a fill, modify, expand by 2 pixels. So that creeps it underneath the line art. So expand, and then we can do, you know, we'll change the color of this, why not? What color? Fill.
Sorry.
Now, this seems like a tremendous pain in the ass.
Oh, it is.
But what I did on my own tablet at home is I created an action in Photoshop. You can use this little actions tab to record macros, essentially. So if you... if you do your selection and then hit record and then do your expand and fill and then hit stop on the actions, you've got that recorded as an action. And you can tie it to a control. And Fess is pushing me away from the computer again.
Well, I had done this earlier.
So I actually had expand and fill in the lineup of the actions, and then you can tie it to a control character, and usually you can go into your tablet settings and set one of the buttons on the pen to be that control character. So you select your area, and as long as you've got your colors, you know, you select your color, you select your area, and then you hit the button on the pen, and it does the expand and fill for you, and then deselects the area. And it goes super fast once you do that.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'll back up here. And deselect. So once you get your flats laid in, what I did for this particular piece, this isn't really part of my standard procedure, but for this particular piece, I did a luminosity overlay to get the lay in some of the variations in the skin, you know, quote unquote skin color.
You know, what with being skinless, there's going to be a little bit more variation in this one.
Yeah, so this
say typical character, so it requires a little extra.
Little extra. Anyway, this layer is just grayscale, but once I set the layer to luminosity and laid it over the color layer, it brings out the veins and the cartilage that you're seeing on the character. Next layer up, I have it set to multiply, and that is my shading layer, where I basically took the flat color that was underneath on the skin, and I dulled it by adding the opposite color in the color wheel. So it's kind of a lightish pinkish salmonish. So to dull it down, you add a little bit of blue, and that's pretty much what the color is. There's a little bit more yellow in it. There's a little bit of blue.
I'm going to stop you just for a second.
Yeah.
All of you people who have been doing your shading by taking the same color and just doing like a lower saturation and laying it on top, stop it. Do what she just said. Go back, choose from the opposite color wheel.
Learn your color wheel.
Do that little process, please. Yeah, learn your color wheel.
I'm going to show you what I
make a difference. Yeah.
I want to show you what I used to do. Basically, I took, okay, that's the color. I want it darker, so I click over here. Or I want it lighter, so I click over here. And, you know.
I actually did find it was like a step-by-step guide to how to color in Photoshop that actually suggested that that's how you should do your shading, is you take that little field, you know, that has all the color gradients on it, and you go a 45-degree angle. And it was so many steps down, and that's your shading. No, bad monkey. Yeah. Stop it.
Well, it can work. It can work for some people that don't care about, I guess, you know.
If you are printing it, you have just created a muddy, undecipherable mess. Stop it.
Yeah.
And also, I got to tell people that basically just take particularly gray and the brush and the fuzzy brush.
Stick that on top.
And just like do it around I can tell it can work for depending on what the kind of comic you're doing, if it's just online or whatever, but sometimes it's way too gray and it looks like it's gray and it doesn't look as good as it could be. I mean, you might as well do the 45-degree angle thing if you're going to be doing that. Like, if you're just doing it online and you don't really care about printing or whatever, but just.
But if you're printing, pay attention to Melissa. Listen.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, yeah, there you go.
Or better yet, hire Melissa.
Yes, I can do that. In short, when you're doing anything with the color layers, do not use black. Do not use any color that contains black if you could help it.
What about browns?
Browns are black.
Use your color wheel.
We'll talk about that brown later.
There are. You know, this straight gray that you see in the fabric here, as you can see, I didn't even use black there. It's pretty much just a combination of cyan, magenta, and yellow. And I usually do that with grays because if you do grays with just flat black, it looks very dead. Whereas if...
Well, she is a zombie. I mean...
Well, she's a superhero.
She's pretty lively.
This is Chrysalis from George R. R. Martin's Wild Cards.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But anyway, the you can adjust. There are vast variations of grays. So if you're putting a gray up against something that's very blue, or you're in a generally blue environment that the panel that you're coloring is generally very blue, you might want to tip that a little bit into the blue section to make it match a little bit better. Or if you need to pop it out, maybe you pull a little bit more blue out of that gray. But you can really, really fine tune your grays that way.
Yeah, gray is not a color in between white and black.
Right.
Just get that notion out of your head, and things will be better for you.
It's dark white. Color.
It's not dark white.
But sometimes it does work to use just the flat gray, but you know, you kind of gotta watch how you do it.
Yeah, you just need to know that there are other options available.
Mm-hmm. And I'm being pushed away from the computer again.
I'm just keeping the track of the time.
Okay. All of a sudden the mouse is doing things. Oh, wow. Anyway, as you can see, I've got my shadows laid out. And I've got this layer set to multiply. Now, when you look at something that's going from light to shadow, if you're looking at a sphere that's being lit from the side, usually the most intense colors are at the rim between dark and light. So the light's a little bit washed out. The dark is, very, very saturated. Well, the midline is saturated with color, and then it gets duller and duller as you go into darkness. So I find that using multiply layer, multiplying the shadows in, kind of achieves some of that effect. And to bring out the highlights, I do another lighting effect on top of that. So this is, the highlights are in a separate layer on top of all that. And once again, this is a layer that's set to soft light. I brought down the opacity a little bit. Let's see if I can bring it up.
I just need to ask, for copyright reasons, who drew this particular image, and so we can give credit?
Well, Adam DeKraker did the line art, and this was for the Green Ronin Company's Mutants and Masterminds role-playing game, specifically the book that brings in the Wild Cards characters, George R. R. Martin's Wild Cards. So there's a lot of creators. I was gonna say.
And this particular character?
This particular character is Chrysalis, created by George R. R. Martin.
Alrighty.
In his Wild Card books.
All right, cool.
Just 5 minutes worth of credits for this one image.
Yeah. I don't want to get in trouble.
So anyway, that is how this particular art piece came together. Ta-da! And after this, what I would do to send it to a comics company would be I'd flatten all the layers and save it as a TIFF file and upload it to their FTP site. That's pretty much it. Yeah.
You said you merge all the layers?
I merge all the layers. Unless specifically requested to keep the layers in, for the most part, if it's just coloring work, almost always you just merge all the layers together as a TIFF file and then send it on. Because
but
they
you'd
don't
save a copy of the
That's where this layered file right here came from. It's my original working file. So I do a save as TIFF, and I think it asks you if you want to flatten the layers. You just select yes.
Because a TIFF can have layers as well, or is that normal?
TIFF can have layers. And there have been some projects where I've been doing both the coloring and the lettering, or just the lettering, where they want layers. So usually they want the colors, the artwork itself in one layer, and then the lettering balloons in one layer, and the lettering itself in another layer. And that
comes down to, that's a lot of it right there, too, is how many people are going to be working with this image and what they're going to be wanting to do with it, as to whether they'll want it in layers or as a flat file. But
right. And with lettering, sometimes they want it in separate layers just because it's easier to edit. If they go, oh my goodness, that that word is misspelled and our letterer is on vacation in New York City. Well, we'll change that in house.
We'll have you on a show again later to talk about lettering, since you also have experience in lettering.
Yeah, I can do that.
So, how big would this particular file be?
Oh, with God. All these
layers? Just out of curiosity.
Generally, this one's pretty small because this is not a full size comics page. But generally, if it is a full size comics page at 600 DPI with the usual layers that I do, it winds up being around 100 megs.
Ooh.
Yeah. And this is the point where I give a little plug for my favorite little device, which is my book, external storage device. Mm. And those come in handy. They're cheap. You can get a freaking terabyte of external storage space.
For like $100 then,
Yeah. How much? Really cheap.
For how much? What are they?
I think the terabyte was $300.
Terabyte.
Are these actual hard drives or like a flash drive type of thing?
If the smaller ones are more, or can be, like the smaller ones, they could easily fit in your pocket. It's likely a laptop hard drive. They do sell flash ones as well, which are solid state. They don't have the running disks like the laptop ones. I don't want the laptop ones. I want the big ones in case I want to just stick it into my computer. But otherwise, they're basically, the internal hard drive of a laptop or a desktop put into a case and external connections, typically a USB or a FireWire or eSATA, which is an external SATA connector.
The My Book that I have, it literally looks like a book. You can put it on a shelf. And it has its own power supply. So it has two plugins, one to connect to the computer and its own power supply. You can get ones that are travel worthy rather than, this one's meant to just sit on a shelf, but they do have ones that are very portable, and so they're shock resistant. But certainly if you're doing any sort of color work or any sort of graphic design, I don't know why you wouldn't have one of these, if nothing else, just to back things up.
Yeah.
But also because it's a lot easier to take this with you, plug it in, and you kind of have an instant portfolio with you as well.
It's been a while since I backed up my computer because I couldn't find the power cable for the hard drive, but I found it, so now I can.
I have a big backup I have to do. I just haven't done it yet.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who's seen like the Archer comics that I've been coloring, those have been between 30 and 50 megabytes, and they're fairly simple coloring though. And right now, Melissa has pulled up a fairly detailed
full color page.
Yeah, full color page, which hopefully people can see. So tell us a bit about what this. What we're looking at, what's it from, credits and everything.
Oh, yes. Oh, I can do that.
I think it is.
this page was from a project called Femme Noir. It was for Ape Entertainment. It was written by Christopher Mills and drawn by the legendary Joe Staton, who's just an amazing cartoonist. So it's a kind of a play on old film noir movies, and when I was brought on to color it, my specific instruction was make it look like a black and white movie only in color.
Okay.
No, I knew what he was going after, so it's very muted colors, and everything kind of has this bluish cast, and you can actually see the edges of the file up at the top where it says Femme Noir FCBD 5. This stuff would all get cropped out in printing.
I like that sunset there. It's pretty neat.
Oh, thanks. The part of my personal process for coloring anything is a lot of times when after I prep the line art and I start my color layer, I start the color layer by coloring everything a single color. And for Femme Noir, I laid in this very pale blue. If you can see the screen, you can see it's 10% blue and 3% magenta. And that kind of sets the color mood for the page, and for my personal process, it kind of helps me choose other colors because you're kind of thinking of matching this one unified color in the page, and it kind of helps pull everything together.
Kind of like using a color filter in like a movie, like how the Matrix clones kind of have like a green.
Yeah, yeah. There are a lot of times it depends on the mood of the scene that I'm coloring, or in this case, the entire comic that I was coloring. But I have always found that using less is more when it comes to coloring. So it helps me, rather than trying to use all of the crayons in the box, it limits me to just a few. it reins in my personal tendencies.
typically, comic book artists aren't looking for, your art school assignment where you were told to use each of these 26 colors in, a single unified scene. That's not, you're not getting paid by the color. Calm down.
Right.
And, set a mood and go with that. That generally reads well in comics. And I like that you do use that single kind of undercolor. It really does tie in a mood. And the great thing about it is for all the work it takes, it's undetectable by the reader. They don't notice it, but it makes such a huge difference. It's worth a little bit of extra time to do it.
Yeah, so I just, on the screen, I just pulled out all of the layers with the exception of the line art and the flat colors. So you can kind of see how that blue is echoed just about everywhere. And I tried to limit the other colors to greens. Now, a nice trick in using color, if you know your color wheel, the warm colors tend to pop to the front.
Yeah.
So in this particular comic, I was trying to use the warm colors very, very sparingly, just where I needed the things to pop out. So, like in this top panel here, your eye is naturally going to gravitate to her face because there's red in the lips and there's gold in the hair.
Right.
And since she's in front, that's kind of what you want to see.
It
tells the story. You see her and then you see her in danger.
It's the same principle as in the 3D that uses the transparent, there's the red and blue goggles. There's also the transparent goggles that will actually basically just behave with the rainbow. They'll take the whole rainbow, take red from the front and purple all the way to the back. If you were around when the Virtual Boy came out, Nintendo Power had a particular issue that had like a bunch of things all throughout the comic where you could put on these transparent 3D glasses and they're all set up rainbow-esque for forward and front. So it's the same principle, same thing with wavelengths. Blue is going to be farther away. Blue shift will be like it's pulling away from you. Red shift is like it's coming towards you. That's why emergency lights are red, so you can see them clearly, and that's of importance.
Yes,
it's important. Yeah.
Oh, also a nice trick for coloring is if you're coloring something that's far away, it tends to get bluer.
Yes.
So you dull your colors as you move away. That's a really nice trick in getting depth in your images.
I was just going to say that if go grab your favorite comic books now and you will notice that in any field where there's a huge amount, you're looking across the expanse of space, you'll notice the backs are very, very blue and then the warm colors are up front. And that's, it automatically creates depth where, it is a two-dimensional image, but it does create a great deal of depth, and it's a great tactic.
Yeah. Well, think of any typical photograph of faraway mountains. Those mountains are always blue. They're almost always just this kind of flat plane of blue.
Yeah.
It that's the atmospheric perspective happening right there.
Purple Mountains Majesty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I live in that state, and they're very rarely purple.
Because you're there. Everyone else is far away, back where there's plenty of air.
Yeah. Wow.
So anyway, I'm going to since I already showed some of the highlighting and shading with the last piece of art that I had on screen, I'm just going to lay this stuff back in so you can kind of see it coming together here. Now I'm going to show you one other thing. I'm going to show you doing color holds. Yes.
If it's going to be a lot, we're going to have to wait till after the break.
Yeah. Okay. Let him get a break first. Yeah. Let's save this. Let's since save. It's good.
Let's save. And then we'll go to part three, color holds.
Color holds. Yeah, for those who can't see, you should have been here live. Anyway, you can see. It's nice to really see all the different types of layers when they get put on, flats, shadows, highlights. And hopefully the video works. So in the meantime, we will take a break.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
The Webcomic Beacon is hosted on the Rampage Network, a webcomics host and community at rampagenetwork.com. And don't forget, we broadcast live on Sundays at webcomicbeacon.com/live. Join our live chat room, have news reports or Becky art, transmit them to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. Questions? Dial our voicemail at 1-320-310-0922.
Suddenly I had a burst of nostalgia.
That's me.
I'm going to end up with some twisted, like, 1940s fetish. God damn it.
1940s? That phrase was used in, like, the 80s or early 90s. I remember claymation things on ABC that used to sing that after the cartoon was, you know, they had to go away.
Well, yeah.
So it's not that
I was
old.
Actually thinking about, like, the old, even before the 40s, they did the same thing on the radio broadcasts. I listened to I had a bunch of Lucille Ball mysteries where Lucille Ball was acting in a bunch of different mysteries. They were brilliant. I haven't been able to find them, but they did the same thing. We'll be right back.
Yes. Nick Carter will be right back after this important message.
It was beautiful.
Probably where they got the audio files from for the what I saw in the 80s.
for the ABC thing. Yeah, it was odd because you were in these dark, deep, you know, tense moments. And then it's, we'll be right back. And it'd go on to the commercial. Yeah.
That was Ravenscroft. He's the guy who did the voice of Tony the Tiger and a lot of Disney stuff.
Yeah.
There's a word for his really deep singing voice. It's like a... I want to say contralto or something, but it's like way low. It's like
it's way lower than baritone.
Way low, yeah.
They're great.
And Tree Lobster has given us a link to all of them on YouTube.
Awesome,
because we love him.
Yes. Okay, are we ready?
We are rolling.
Woohoo! All right, now we go on to color holds. Now, as you can see, this is, you know, pretty much finished. It's pretty close. But I wanted to do was bring out... Apparently, this guy was supposed to be an alligator guy, so I got instructions that these little U-shaped things on his arms were scales. So to, you know, kind of do something with that, I filled them in with green. So I'm turning on the layer right now where the little green bits of line art are actually filled in. And pretty much all I did was it just made sure the layer for the color hold was up above the line art layer. And then I selected the ink layer. So anyway, if we go in, you can see the line art itself is selected. And then what I just did was go into the color hold, and we'll just select a completely different color and fill it in. So as long as that's selected, you can just kind of, you know, go in and color essentially over the line art, but completely match the lines itself. And that's all you need to do with the color hold.
That's a lot easier than I was thinking.
Is this also known as a line knockout?
Yeah. Okay. I think some people.
But I remember reading the Legion of Superheroes in the 80s, and they started to move towards doing a lot of line knockouts for view screens and energy bolts and trying to make things holographic and stuff like that. And it would all, instead of just black outlines, it was color.
Yeah,
really cool.
Yeah, there were a couple of comic book artists, particularly the person who's leaping to mind is Neil Adams, the Batman artist. Once they started getting more sophisticated printing techniques back in the mid 70s, I think it was, Neil Adams got really friendly with the ladies in the print shop, and he started really learning the processes. A lot of these classic... No, I'm serious. A lot of the classic comic book artist married women from the print shop. I'm not kidding.
It wouldn't surprise me. You spent a lot of time with those girls.
but the thing is, what Adams was doing and several other people was they were really getting into, okay, what can we do with this process to really expand, you know, just the what we can make it look like. Can we lay in photographs? What would that look like? Can we knock out lines and instead of having them on the black plate, have them be on the blue plate? And just really playing with the process itself. And so, which is why in the 70s and 80s, you just kind of got this explosion in the way comics looked because the coloring was getting far more sophisticated. And then, of course, when Photoshop came along, it became a whole new game.
Yeah. I do have a question about the color holds or the knockouts.
Yeah.
Now, basically, you have the ink layer in lower than this this knockout layer. And
so it's on top of the
ink layer. It's on top. Now, is this multiplied? Is it
when
it goes
normal.
When it goes through the printing process, is it basically saying, there's no black here. There's no mixing. It's just this color right here.
Right. Right. Since this is a normal layer on top of everything else, once you flatten the file down and send it, the only thing being included in this little area here are those little green scales.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice.
So as far as the file is concerned, there is no black here once you flatten all the layers.
Right. And when you multiply... If I
were to multiply it, it'd just look black, because it would... Because
the black overtakes the green.
Right.
Right.
Okay, now I wanted to backtrack a bit and explain that you have... Basically, the setup is, for when you start with your inks, you have the main ink layer of like the original inks.
Yes.
And then you basically select just that black. Just, you know, it should be just black and white or black and nil, I suppose, if you have it transparent...
If the ink layer is on if it's black lines on white, if that's the actual graphic in the ink layer and you set it to multiply, the white just completely knocks out.
Okay. And so, okay. So basically, and then you select the inks, you go to select, modify, contract 2 pixels.
Yep. You create your undercolor layer.
Yeah. Well, actually you would copy, paste... I guess you could copy paste because it would then properly overlay.
Right. I just create a new layer and fill
with the
contracted outline.
Okay. So you have a new layer on top, but you select on the bottom, and then in the new layer, you with the contracted area, you just fill black.
Mm-hmm.
But the underlayer, the ink layer, all the black is 100% black. That's it.
Right.
And then the underlayer, you fill that as 60, 40, 40, 100.
Right.
60 cyan, 40 magenta, 40 yellow, and 100% black.
Yes.
Okay. That's just a particular thing. Now, what is the undercolor layer multiply or is the inks layer multiply?
Inks layer is multiply because you want to be... The color layer underneath it, you want that to show through the inks. So the ink layer is multiplied. Actually, it doesn't matter if the undercolor layer is on top of or underneath the ink layer because it's a normal layer.
Okay.
So no matter where that 100% black is in relation to the undercolor layer is always going to be the 60, 40, 40, 100.
Mm-hmm.
Because the ink layer is already at 100% 100. And if you multiply 100% 100 by 100% 100...
Right.
Black. 100% black... And 100% black, you still get 100% black in Photoshop.
It's I'm just playing the person that doesn't know anything about, you know, just to clarify for others that may not know. That was supposed to be funny.
I didn't know you were done yet.
Okay. I can't even set myself up.
there's one thing.
Yes.
Looking over your coloring and looking at the richness of the colors and the saturation levels. If you are looking for printers, there are printers out there that will tell you that they will not accept files over a certain saturation rate.
Yes.
Find other printers is my you know, personal preference, but please keep that in mind. If you're an artist that you're hiring a colorist and you have a printer in mind that has those kind of requirements already set, let them know. Yes. Don't hit a douchebag that has them do all this work and they say, oh, can you go back and tone that all down? Like it's a one-step process.
What do you mean by saturation levels? I might have missed something.
The level of inks.
Yeah, they're afraid it's going to cost more ink, maybe.
you'll see like a saturation level, you know, in Photoshop there's even a saturation slider that, you know, you can take it from 40, you know, 0% all the way to 100% saturation. Mm-hmm. And there are some printers that will say, you know, if you want your work to look good, we need it to be 60% or less saturated, fully saturated on any of the CMYK levels. Mm-hmm. So if you do have a printer in mind before you get your colorist, please pass that info on, because if you don't, you're a douchebag, because they're going to have to do twice the work to go back and basically, you know, pull all their saturation points down. It's not a one-step process to do that.
Yeah,
it's there's also sometimes printers will have color profiles for Photoshop, and that's also important to hand off to the colorist if there is one present. Another word about saturation levels and types of paper. The type of paper that you print on really affects how it works, how the color works. I mean, really affects it. What you want, it's fine to print more cheaply on matte paper as opposed to glossy paper, but you have to be very, very mindful on the levels of ink you were using.
Yeah.
And if you're going the uber cheap, like that newsprint style paper,
yes,
please, please, please know that really limits your color options. You're never going to get a vibrant, you know, color art kind of color on that newsprint. It does not work.
You can get it pretty vibrant, but you have to be very, very mindful of your ink levels on in all four of the inks, because first of all, you have to be really especially careful not to get black in any of the colors, because the paper just sucks up the ink so fast. it just eats it, and it automatically makes the colors just a little bit muddy by the nature of being on that paper. So you got to be very, very careful. Also, with any of your ink sliders, if you have a very saturated color, you want to have it where you just have one or two of the sliders way over to the side in 100%, but everything else has to be at really low levels, if at all. So if you have if you want a really pure red, like the Flash, the costume of the Flash, you drag the slider to 100% magenta, 100% yellow, nothing else. Yeah. If you add even the slightest amount of blue in there, it just turns to mud.
Yeah, it'll even get like almost a mauve sort of hue to it. If you add anything else, it turns really bizarre.
Right.
Personally, if I had my way, I would make that kind of newsprint illegal for anything with any sort of detail at all. It would be, you know, Donald Duck. Those kind of cartoons are the only things that could ever be printed on that newsprint, and everything else has to be a decent
printing. Now, on the flip side, if you're printing on high gloss paper, you want to really stay away from the saturated colors, because that stuff will just pop right out and distract from everything else.
So
what do comic books normally print on? Then it sounds like
it depends. Seriously, you gotta ask the publisher what you're going to be printing on. For example, when I was doing Dr. Blank's Superhero Shrink, I kept the colors very light, very very simple, because I knew this was a self-published book. We were going to be printing on the cheap. It was going to be matte paper. It was going to be newsprint, essentially.
Yeah.
And it turned out it looks fine on that printing, but it'd be a very
fine to me.
Yeah. But
and it looks fine because you know what you're doing with that paper,
right?
You can't expect to, you know, if you're working with a colorist and they send you work and it looks beautiful on your screen, you can send that to 12 different printers and get 12 different qualities back, depending on the kind of paper that they're using and the process that they're using to print it. I've yet to find a printer, and I've called dozens of them, that would not send me a sample of the paper. Yeah. Get a sample, send it to your colorist. And even just having the paper in their hand, most good colorists will have some indication of what to do with it. But then you can also run print tests, and then you'll know. So,
yeah, please.
It can get spendy if you don't get any, like, a proof or something like that. Especially, it depends on if you're trying to do print on demand or actually like one of those really huge ones where it needs a lot of more upfront things. As far as like print on demand, I know there's Kablam and there's Comics Press. However, at this point, from hearing people, I would probably not go with Kablam on strictly because unless they've changed it. I've last used it, since it's been at least a year since I've last used them, they only take RGB.
Yeah.
Which means that if you color in CMYK, you have to convert it to RGB, and then they have to convert it to CMYK. There's no other way around it. It's impossible to print in RGB.
And please keep in mind that they also have saturation limits. Yeah. So I've already contacted Comic Express, so this is full disclosure. I've already contacted them and said that they're my guys, and I'm super, super happy, and oh my god, you guys are awesome. So you have to take that kind of
saturation? Do they have
No, they don't. And samples that have come back where people have taken, you know, their artwork, they obviously know the color profiles on their screen, what those color profiles are in Photoshop or whatever they color in. Then they take color samples coming back from Comic Express, and they've been off by maybe 2 points, which is extreme. I mean, that's awesome for, you know, for a print to come back that close to your original on-screen color production. So I'm obviously biased from this point on. They've been very, very kind to me. And, you know, you can get your proof for the price of a single comic, which is like $2 and something. So,
yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
No, that's one
of many plugs coming your way, I'm sure. But
yeah, I've actually had very little experience finding a printer on my own because I've always worked for publishers, and they're the people who take the files to the printer.
So if you're really lucky, the publisher has their own print section.
Yes.
Wow.
I've had pretty good luck just handing my artwork off to publishers because hopefully, you know, they know what they're doing when it comes to printing. Right. But, you know, every once in a while it comes back, oh, I thought we were going to be on matte, but it looks great. The artwork looks so great, we printed it on glossy. And I'm like, no.
No.
It doesn't look right.
Why would you do that?
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of the glossy page comics.
Yeah, I don't like the super glossy, but there's a kind of a hybrid where there's a nice coating on the paper, but it's not really, really glossy on the surface.
Like half gloss.
Yeah.
Half gloss.
Yeah, it
that
is.
That might be okay.
Yeah, that... I think that's pretty ideal for comics work because it's the nice happy medium.
If you have you know a comic book collection there, and you have some comics that they're really nice and shiny, but they've got black on the back, and if you hold it for too long, your fingerprints fingerprints on the black on the back. That's glossy paper. If you have other ones where it still looks shiny, but your fingerprints don't come off on the black, that's that half gloss. And I think the quality turns out just as well. You're less likely to ruin the comics. And, you know, just from a colorist standpoint, it doesn't warp the colors, and you don't have to worry about your saturation levels as much.
Grab the acetates.
Oh,
yay.
Okay.
So we are pretty much done. I'm going to have Melissa go grab some. She has some acetates, if I'm saying that word correctly. And I'll be showing that because that is really cool stuff. So let's get the camera to... Hey, look, there's me. Hi. So...
Meek!
So I'm keeping mindful of the time we have because I still got to go over a little bit of news.
That's Mrs. Closet.
So we're gonna have Melissa show some old school ways of coloring.
Oh.
So, Melissa, you can go ahead and use...
We have a history lesson. All right. So, and back in ye olde days of the original four-color printing process, the way coloring used to be done is that a colorist would take a photostat of the line art and take these dyes called Doc Martens inks, and would, and the, what these inks were 25% variations of all the inks in the CMYK process. So one of the dyes would be 25% magenta, or 25% cyan, 0% magenta, 50% yellow, and 0% black. And so there was this, I think it was 128 different dyes in one of these sets.
Oh my God.
Yes. So the colorist would take a photostat and color in everything with each of these dyes. And in every single instance of the dye, you can see a little number penciled in for which dye the colorist was using in that area.
Wow.
And that is the code for the ink levels used by the printing room.
Oh, wow.
And so, what the little old ladies in... The joke was, it was the little old ladies in the printing room. What they would do would be, they'd take all of those codes and they'd make the plates off of the colorist's notes. Oops. And what they'd come up with is something like this. Now, this is an original acetate proof for a Batman page. It's the first page of The Knight of Thanks But No Thanks, which, if I remember right, is Neil Adams' art. It was colored by Adrian Roy, and I bought this from Adrian because these things are so cool.
So cool.
And what this is there are four layers of plastic, and each one is printed with one of the inks. So here's the black layer. Here's the blue layer. And once all of these pieces of plastic are taped together, you can see they make a full image. But there's the magenta and the yellow. But that's what it looks like when it's put together. So this is how they'd build the image in the print shop. And when this thing looked okay, it was ready to go to press for real. So that's what I wanted to show off.
I
that
love
like a hell of
things.
A lot of work.
What I love about these things is I have about five or six of them, and I take them around to conventions when I'm asked to talk about coloring, because there is no better way to show people how the four-color printing process comes together to create one image. And it's a great way to illustrate how it used to be done.
Oh, thank God for Photoshop.
Yes. Oh, yes. So if you want to see another one, I've got a couple more here.
We don't entirely have the time to do so.
Okay, I do have one quick question for Melissa. Will you allow me that, Fess?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
As a colorist, I would like to know, what are the things that you most want to know from an artist? You know, somebody's hired you as their colorist. What are the things you wish they would have told you?
It's almost always how is this going to be printed? It's the is it going to be on glossy paper or matte paper? That is the biggest thing, and sometimes the publisher doesn't even know. If you're working for the big houses, yeah, they know exactly what they want when they're going to print something. But when you're doing small press, which I've done a lot of times you have no idea. Sometimes you can just do the homework yourself and go, okay, I'm working for Ape Entertainment. What do their comics look like? Go down to your comic book shop, find an Ape Entertainment book, pick it up off the shelf. Hey, okay, that's the type of paper they're using.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, yeah. But other than that, there are some artists and some publishers, some editors that really know what they want and some that don't. The ones that really know what they want are a blessing just because they'll tell you up front what they want. Like when I was doing Femme Noir, that instruction of make it look like a black and white movie only in color, that's exactly what I needed to know. That's precisely what I needed to know for the stylistic look of the book.
Awesome.
But
so for all of you people out there who are, you know, thinking about going into print comics and you're thinking, I'm going to hire a colorist because I don't want to do all that on my own, like I've done. the more homework you do ahead of time as far as what you're going to be printing it on, which printer you're going with, any of their limits, you're going to help your colorist out a lot and you're going to end up with a better result, you know, so.
Yeah, colorists and letterers are tech nerds, usually.
Yes.
If they are printing nerds and they are Photoshop nerds and they are Illustrator nerds. So the better technical information about where their work is going after they get done with it, like what the format of the file needs to be in, what the DPI needs to be, like printers' layouts, you know, where they the bleed masks that a certain printer uses, a lot of times they'll have a template. And if you can give that to your colorist or your letterer, they will be forever thankful because then they know exactly what the margins are for that particular printer.
Yeah.
That stuff is valuable. It's usually not as critical for coloring, but, well, it can be depending on if you're doing full bleed pages or not. It's critical for lettering, so you know where.
And even writers, keep in mind that your colorist needs to know if, you know, three issues in that, you know, blue tattoo on the guy's arm does something. They're going to to know that if there's specific colors that are going to play an important key, you know, later on, they need to know that up front. Don't make them go back and change crap. They're going to be mad at you, and you don't want to piss off your colorist.
Yeah.
Give them the script. Make sure they have the script.
Yeah, please.
And if you're doing something that's historical or if there's something that has a set color scheme, like, you know, if your colorist is going to be coloring a Superman book and Superman's fighting somebody with a specific outfit, give them reference.
Yeah.
Yeah, send them a file of, okay, the Clockmaster looks like this. And this is what the colors are on the costume.
There's nothing wrong with taking pictures of architecture that you like and this color scheme, and I really like the way this city looks. And more information is less, yes?
Yeah.
Or more information is better than less.
So if there's any other questions, okay, I'm going to need the big chair now.
Really?
Yes, I need to go over some stuff.
Okay.
He gets the big boy chair.
So this has been an extra long episode of the Webcomic Beacons thus far, and very informative as well. Therefore, meaning that
for
I have
change.
To... Yeah, for a change. where I don't need to...
Stop it!
Where I don't need to basically rant on for too long about news and everything. But I do need to get the news in, and if there's anybody that has a question for Melissa before we go, now is your time to punch it into chat while I'm blabbing away.
It would help if we could see the chat room.
Well, they're mostly just concerned that Fess is attacking you right now.
They have time. They have time while I go over the news, and then we'll bring it back up once we go over it. So, So let's see here. I'm checking our email. If you have any, you know, questions, comments, or whatever, you can email it to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. Particularly if you have some Becky art for us to run, you can look at the art page for specifications on how to draw. It's a rectangle shape, and to consider that there is text that will be going over it. Melissa has colored up one for. This particular episode and her original without all of our text on it will be again going up into the art page unadulterated, so people can check that out. I will say that next week, the 14th of November, will be the Webcomic Beacon newscast. This will be the first of its kind. I hope it'll go off. It's basically a culmination of news relative to webcomicers, writing, and art. And I'm going to be having Ross Scott of he does the webcomic The System at systemcomic.com, and hopefully that will all work out and we'll be compiling news that we find out. Also, Eric of Exern.com, EXIERN, I believe, has been a news hound and fetching news articles that he finds and such. So hopefully it'll be really cool. And then we will for surely be weekly. So then, you know, Webcomic Beacon will be the place to for news and discussion of webcomics weekly.
Crown.
Yay.
Yay.
Hey, they're not. I can.
So I guess I'm off that week or what? What are we doing?
I think so. I'm basically developing these new programs with some new talent, so to speak. I also have the Webcomic Beacon EP for extended play episodes where they're shorter, more centric. Like last week, underneath your noses, I interviewed the guy Tyler James who does who cream up the 30 characters challenge. I uploaded that as the first EP. After that, Adam Smithy of Apple Valley and the Apple of Discord will be helping me to host that show as we look into memes, tropes, and other challenges, as well as any of you guys, or if I want to give a quick featurette to Tomaker in particular. And that's all that we talk about. No tied in topic. It's just, hey, this guy has some really cool stuff. We want to talk about it. So that's the EP project programming that I am trying to put together. And so it's to expand the base of the Webcomic Beacon, but there's no plan to change the core programming, which are the typical Sunday episodes with myself, Mark, and Tanya.
Yay!
So, we do have some webcomic news here that I will be mentioning. Mike, who is in charge of Prepare to Die, that comic, as well as the Wagon Webcomic Battle trading card game. He's gearing up for Wagon version 2.0, which has some improved card designs and some new art, not all new art. The version 1 cards are on sale. They're like $2 off, I think. Normally, so that's one thing that I'm mentioning, just because we have a particular promo card. I tend to carry these cards, the promo card of the Webcomic Beacon card, with me to conventions. So if you have some Wagon Webcomic Battle trading card games and you wanna get the special card. Check us out at conventions, so particularly when I go to them. I'm not sure if Mark or Tanya have any copies, but let's see here. Also, I'm gathering some music from people may know Chris Johnson, a.k.a. Jinx Tiger, from on Twitter. He used to have a furry comic. Now he's like writing a novel instead. But he also does some music, and he also sent us some music, a simple remix of the song. Also, Blue from Hello the Future. I sent some music for her to see if she can come up with some sort of Webcomic Beacon song. This is all gearing up for the third anniversary coming up in December, the first week of December, so that'll be exciting.
Yay!
So be around for that. We got a milestone, 1 year anniversary. We have Neko Machi at Neko-Machi, MACHI.com. that is at least one anniversary, one milestone that we have for this week. There's not a lot more on here. If there's anything else that I missed, I'll probably go in and splice it after the fact. But I think we're pretty much to the end of our show here on the Webcomic Beacon.
Unless I had questions.
Oh yeah,
I'm still trying to dig up questions. Mostly, we've been talking about porn, Becky, and PenguinCon. I've asked a couple times for questions, though. So
the things porn. That I miss.
I have just outed you as the most awesome human I know. So let's see. Oh, they did want to know what your sweater says, but we were able to figure that out.
That's because it's mirrored. So now I mirrored it back. So
yeah, it's a promo shirt from the film Valkyrie.
Yeah. That's why, if I had to pick a god, I'd go with Odin. Come on, his angels rocked. They were big, busty women, came down and got you off the battlefield.
Odin rules.
Better than Crumb. let's see here. We have, it doesn't look like we have any questions. I'm looking for question marks. It was mirrored in the.
I don't think we've had
I have
any.
The webcam affixed upside down to the top shelf, so I have to mirror it up and down. I don't think I see any relevant questions in here. what does your sweater say isn't really a coloring question.
Well, I see people are mocking me for not being at PenguinCon. I might still be at PenguinCon because World Horror Convention is going to be fairly expensive. So I don't know. We'll know. I'll know closer to April.
We do hope that you can come. But I think what has happened is that this was informative enough that she answered the questions before they came up.
Yeah, I
had a number of questions that you answered naturally as you were going through. So
we still like the shirt.
Somebody's asking when this show is going to air. It will probably air between now and Tuesday, depending on when I get the time for it.
See, I gave you an extra day. I said Wednesday.
Okay. I would like to have it done on Sundays, but after this I have to get to coloring Ardra. And I think I'm mostly done. So.
Melissa's there. She can teach you brown.
Yeah, brown. Yeah. the particular brown in general.
Melissa, make sure you have the knife.
When you
make
teach
sure
him,
we already you
grabbed
have
it.
The knife.
Dude, no.
It's very dull. I've been basically. I don't have any. I don't have any reason for this knife, so I've just been like stabbing pop cans and cardboard. It's like,
yeah, Melissa. Actually, if you could do the world a favor, if you could just go ahead and make Ardra's hair color for Fest, just so he can just sample it and use it over and over again. Would you please make brown for Fest?
I have a color palette for it, but yeah. Anyway,
yeah.
So,
make Ardra brown for Fess, okay?
This is it for the Webcomic Beacon this week. We will be getting her for lettering at another point in time, but next week will be the newscast, and I'm going to try to have it a live show as well. We'll see. I'll get back to you on that, but at least there will be another MP3 for next week anyway. So anyway, this has been Fess of FessBooks.com.
This is Tanya of DaisiesAndShit.com.
And this is Mark. Blah, blah, blah. And this is Mark of AutumnLake.com.
And this is Melissa Kircher of TheGeekLife.tv.
Tune in for more at WebcomicBeacon.com.
Oh, I
that's more fun.
Let's stop it.
I'm trying to move the mouse, and she's moving the pen, and she's fucking me up.
Yeah.